Welcome to Fresno Landia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. On today's podcast, we have Gregory Weaver with us. He is Fresno Land's environmental reporter here to talk about the latest developments around a proposal by multinational company CEMEX to blast mine on the San Joaquin River just north of Fresno. Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get into what CEMEX is wanting to do and why we want to talk about that today, I'd love to just have you tell us a little bit about the history of the San Joaquin River. This used to be one of California's most majestic waterways, healthy salmon spawns, drained to the Bay Delta. What has happened to this river over time?
I think what's happened since the 1850s, when settlement of the San Joaquin Valley happened in earnest, the losses that the San Joaquin River's had is almost unimaginable. We have scholars who've done world histories of ecological transformations, and one of them called what happened to the San Joaquin River and the San Joaquin Valley probably the biggest destruction of an entire ecology in world history. You see some of the early, you listen to some of the early oral histories of what happened when some of the early river diversions happened on the Tulare Basin, so the Kings, the San Joaquin, and it is about whole wetlands paved over, cut down, turned into these sort of routinized parcels that could be used to grow crops.
And we saw what it looked like when nature had its way during that really prodigious water event where Tulare Lake reemerged. The San Joaquin, the Kings, they all poured into this massive lake, which was the largest freshwater lake west of the Mississippi, and that's essentially gone.
So in the 1870s and 1880s, some of the biggest irrigation districts in the world were formed off the San Joaquin and Kings River. And then around the 1940s, the dam on the San Joaquin, Fryant Dam, went up. And it was at that point that, even before this dam went up, I've heard this story now from three or four people who actually still remember this. It came out after our story on the subject came out. Even after all the diversions that the San Joaquin River had before the Fryant Dam, there were still salmon spawning, and these salmon were so prolific. One person will tell me that the sound of the fish flapping against the riverbed was so loud that you could hear it inside a house. Another one was you could walk across the river because the salmon were just so plentiful that it looked like just some sort of glistening silver stream.
And now you can walk across the river because there's not enough water in it. I regularly float the San Joaquin River in the summers, starting at Fryant Dam and going all the way to the 41. And there are points in the river where I have to stand up and drag my raft because the depth is less than a foot. And I think, and we can talk about this in a second, the river is crippled at best and on life support at worst.
Yeah, I think there's two or three stages to what happened to the San Joaquin River. Certainly Fryant Dam is the second one. It killed the salmon run at a certain point. It's rare to see a river in America over such a short period of time be completely erased. That's what happened to the San Joaquin River. There was about 20 to 30 miles in, the river went dry for a very long time. It wasn't only until this gargantuan multi-decade lawsuit that some of these river flows were restored to the point where the river could actually flow back out into the bay, which had happened for probably 8-10 million years as a single water flow. And the situation that we're in, even if that were to hold, there were even more mistakes that were made, I'd say. The next big one was the gravel mining of the San Joaquin River. There's estimates that around the turn of the century, so about in the year 2000, that about 98% of all of our roads, sidewalks, etc., were taken as gravel from the San Joaquin River. It's really quite extraordinary. I don't think residents really quite understand how much of an impact gravel mining has had on the river, simply because the river it's lost to most people. You can hardly see it except for a few points in the city. And that's because most of the river is actually just gravel pits near the city. And this is something that's quite exceptional for a city to do to a riverfront. Sacramento, for example, there's some gravel mining along the city's main riverfront, but most of it was turned into parks that a city would decide to basically take almost an entire series of vegetation and gravel around the area, river wash, and basically dig it into pits. to the point where it's mostly not a whole ecosystem anymore. I think if you go around the river today where these pits have happened, the biggest one is Sycamore Island. It's a place that's mostly filled up with invasive trees and old pipelines and some algae. This is an area that had branching networks of water flowing through them and salmon and all sorts of riparian forest. So I think between the original San Joaquin River diversions, the damming of Fryant, and then the gravel mining, these are changes to the river that I think fully looking at the scope of what's happened that's been lost for people who can experience the river is hard to fathom.
Okay, so fast forward to March 2025, we have CEMEX, which is this multinational company. They already have gravel mining operations on the San Joaquin River, and they're basically asking Fresno County, hey, we'd like to blast mine a hole in the San Joaquin River to further our gravel mining. Could you go into a little bit more into what they're saying they want to do and why they say it's needed?
Yeah, so to give an idea, blast mining pits, these are things that have been created at some scale, Sycamore Island, but this is at a completely different level. We talk about Fryant Dam as having this huge consequence on the river. Millerton Lake, the body water that rests behind Fryant Dam, it's about 320 feet deep. That's pretty deep. You think about Millerton Lake, that's deep. This proposal that Fresno County is going to be voting on is almost twice as deep as that. It's going to be 600 feet right along the river. And I think simply put, this is going to be one of the biggest, most consequential votes for the Board of Supervisors in this century. It's going to be a vote over whether or not we're going to continue to mine the San Joaquin River. And such an idea is extremely controversial. Simply because of this history that we've discussed, there's no more gravel left in the San Joaquin River. That's all been scraped clean. If you look at the historical gravel that's come out of the river, we've mined 90%, something like that. There's virtually no easily mineable gravel.
Can you talk specifically about what the damage will be to the river? Sedimentary damage, pollution-related damage, what will it look like for the river?
Part about having a 600-foot deep blast pit so close to the river is that we don't even know what the risks are to large-scale catastrophes. We know that our risks of major floods are going to increase dramatically due to climate change over the next 50 to 70 years. And what a surging river looks like so close to a pit and what a potential wall collapse would look like. That frankly would devastate the river. It would be something like a hurricane level event, the sort of stuff we see like in the North Carolina hurricane that we saw, destruction of infrastructure, ecosystems, the sort of thing that takes decades, if ever, to grow back. What's so controversial about this proposal, beyond these catastrophic risks to what remains of the San Joaquin River, is simply that there's other gravel supplies in the county that don't involve such large potential impacts to key ecosystems. One of the interesting things I found in my reporting for this is that apparently the county has twice as much gravel than it needs over the next 50 years to supply the Fresno area with construction supplies. And so a big question for me in the story is simply, why is a company going forward with a mining proposal to extract gravel from an already overmined river habitat, and local officials have nothing to say about whether or not we really need this mine or not?
So let's talk about those local officials. We have the San Joaquin River Conservancy, not to be confused with the San Joaquin River Parkway Trust, which is a separate nonprofit. So the River Conservancy is this weird quasi-state agency that's charged with overseeing the Fresno and Madera County portion of the San Joaquin River. And in your reporting, a big part of your story was basically they didn't want to talk very publicly about this. What's going on? What are you hearing from people?
I think that the River Conservancy has had a tough time trying to spool up and come out in opposition for this mine. I think the big story about how the Conservancy is interacting with this proposal is the Fresno region's an area that's defined almost exclusively by the dominance of development interests over any environmental interests. And the San Joaquin River just stands as absolute testament to that. 98% of its flow was diverted to Kern County and all these other major agribusiness interests when we needed concrete, we took the best area that the public could have used as a park system, as a green space. We didn't think about the public in this case. We just used it to mine, to extract the literal bedrock of the river to put it into our roads. These are, again, these are things that other cities, they also needed concrete and roads. They decided that they wanted to make their river something that the public could enjoy. For example, Sacramento and even Kern, even Bakersfield, they have a parkway running through their city. And so it's quite exceptional that Fresno really doesn't. And this is what the River Conservancy was created to do.
Yeah, let me go ahead and read the mission, because the mission statement is public on their website. It says, their mission is to manage public lands, restore natural habitats, and provide recreational opportunities while balancing environmental conservation with responsible development. That doesn't seem like what's happening right here.
One of the most painful points in some of the interviews I had with some river board officials was the idea that you have 200% of the gravel that you really need, and now you want to go blast a river to go get more gravel. I think one word that comes to mind is waste. Like, you're doing something that you don't need to do. Would a 600 foot blast pit along the river constitute as waste if the thing you're trying to extract from the river you already have in an abundant surplus and can find other places that you could also find this material? I think this is a question of waste for a river conservancy. I think it raises a powerful question.
And I would, if I'm looking at Kimex, I see a publicly traded multinational company that's trying to maximize profits for shareholders. That's what I see going on. I think it's deeply unethical to lie about those things that you described before, saying that you have something, there's not enough gravel to go around, but patently there is. I think that's problematic. I think for me, what I see more of a problem is our government and our regulatory agencies not stepping in to push back on development projects.
So I want to enter into the record on this podcast. Bobby McCauley, who's the chair of the San Joaquin River Conservancy, he's a Madera County supervisor. He actually wrote an opinion piece in GV Wire, Granville Wire, owned by developer Darius Assemi, in which he takes direct aim at your reporting, Greg, for putting the Conservancy on the hot seat about their role in this, and basically says, quote, the article critiques the Conservancy for not taking a more direct stance on the mining proposal and portrays its staff and leadership as inactive. However, this perspective fails to accurately depict the nature of the Conservancy's work and mission and raises questions about the transparency and completeness of the information provided. The Conservancy is a state agency with a clear mission. Importantly, the Conservancy is neither a political organization nor a regulatory body. It does not govern land use decision outside of its jurisdiction. So basically what he's arguing is they don't have a regulatory role. He's saying that's just not the role that they play. So let's discuss that.
That's interesting. Why don't you go first, Greg?
The first way I think about it is, let's just take what McCauley's saying at face value, which is that they don't have regulatory authority. I think the question that weighs most heavily on my mind is, then what is the role of the Conservancy? If you cannot, in spite of this lack of, let's just say, bureaucratic muscle, you can't speak out against the proposal at all. This is the other thing I found in my reporting. McCauley didn't want to say anything about this blast mine. He said that the board would probably not even take a vote ever on whether it thinks that this mine is necessary and good in the public interest. This is what these people are on the board to represent.
Literally on the Conservancy website, it says the Conservancy works to facilitate the development of the parkway, cultivate public support, and secure its future. I think by opening up this blast mine, I think that last item on that description of what their purpose is, I think that's undercutting that. So I agree with you, Greg. If you don't have direct, you know, regulatory power, you have a platform.
And what McCauley's bringing up is a point in my piece that there was another. If you go, how far away is Monterey from us due west? It's about, what, 100 miles? It's a nice town, gorgeous town on the bay, and it used to be the most prolific area of sand mining in the United States. Right along the bay, you had 5, 6, maybe 15 sand mines. And in 2017, almost in a situation exactly like what we have on the San Joaquin River right now, CMEX was the last sand mine on the Monterey Bay. And the State Coastal Commission, you know, another board that has a huge amount of symbolic power, went forward and declared CMEX a public nuisance. And they worked with all these city mayors around the area and basically forced a restoration deal with the company. They abandoned the mine and gave a whole bunch of money to make sure that what their mining impacts would be mitigated with this huge restoration plan to turn the area into a trail. And so,
The reason those things happen is you have an engaged public that's aware of the potential losses. So let's contrast this. There's another situation with sand mines going on in San Diego. Near El Cajon, there's like a golf course where they're considering demolishing and putting in a sand mine. You wouldn't believe the amount of vitriol at every board meeting, the Facebook groups.
I would believe it, actually.
Yeah. But we don't have that here. And I was saying before we started recording that we need advocates that want to make a lot of noise when this stuff comes to town, because at this point, I haven't seen a lot of organization. I hope there is, but that's not present here. And I think that's maybe demographics. It's maybe we're in the Central Valley where land is largely commodified. If you think about agriculture, we look at land through a commodity lens. And so I think that's part of it. But I think if the public doesn't get engaged, then the boards don't have any incentive to act.
I think one thing, I keep coming back to Bobby McCauley's comments here in his article coming at your reporting, Greg. But so we talked about the Coastal Commission and the role that they played in Monterey. The Coastal Commission does have land use authority, and they are empowered to deny projects in a way that the Conservancy isn't. And what McCauley is saying in this article, I didn't know this history of the Conservancy, is he's saying that when the bill was drafted in the state legislature by Jim Costa when he was in the assembly to create the Conservancy, the only way that the city of Fresno County and Madera County would join the Conservancy and support the bill is if the Conservancy didn't have land use authority, which is interesting. So it was intentionally designed to create a neutered public agency, if you will.
A lot of people on the board will tell you, the more conservative ones, the more timid ones, that you're right, that the Conservancy was it was a compromise because it's created, I can't remember if it was the late 80s or early 90s.
90s.
There's a lot of land speculation that was going on the riverbed. If you go at the edge of Van Ness Extension and near Herndon, there's a guy named Thomason who was wanting to build a whole bunch of houses right on the river plain. Up the river, close to where this blast mine proposal is Ball Ranch. And during the 90s, this is when Fresno was growing like a quarter mile a year north. And this was gargantuan growth. Developers wanted to develop Ball Ranch too. There's all sorts of stuff. Crazy Del Monte, the big banana company, they were buying land up in Madera. They thought that at the time that by 2020, there'd be about 150,000 people where Tesoro Viejo's at right now. There were fever dreams of sprawl in the area. And so this Conservancy was created to basically make it so that developers could sell this land that they were speculating on to the Conservancy. It was basically a bailout package for developers to sell to the area because they could sell really to nobody else. That's all the Conservancy really established. And so the big problem that I think McCauley's bringing up is simply that if you go to Santa Monica or if you go up north, you see the American River, the Conservancies there are far more powerful in that they've done a lot more to empower themselves in a way that the Conservancy has not. A lot of, almost every Conservancy in the state has established a joint powers authority between the cities and the county to be able to have a coordinated leadership on matters of key public importance, something as sacred as a river shed. In Fresno, and with the San Joaquin River Conservancy, that hasn't happened. A lot of egos have gotten in the way. And I think right now, the dominant perspective from the river board is, we don't know what the future of the river is. We'll acquire property, we'll maybe sit on it for 15, 20 years, maybe get a project going, maybe get a grant from the state, but the sort of way to build consensus, what is the river? In an area like Fresno, which has one of the bottom three park space acres per resident in America, this is an area, imagine if you could say, we're going to plant 1 million trees on the San Joaquin River, a place that had all its riparian forests destroyed in a matter of 5-10 years. We're going to plant 1 million trees, and this is going to provide shade. And when it's 110 degrees outside, people can go out and enjoy the coolness of the river and the shade and whatnot. These are things that this is not in the imagination of any Fresno residents, not in the Conservancies either. And
Go to Lost Lake. the park that's right on the San Joaquin River in the middle, you will not find a parking spot. It has infinite value for our community, and that's untapped. But again, circling back to what I said before, we need community support for these kinds of things. So let's talk about our county supervisors. What role do they have in this?
They play arguably the most important role, I think, short of somebody like Jim Costa, who could probably with one fell swoop say, I don't like this mine. He can make things happen. He's the sort of guy that has been quiet on this issue so far. What role the board will play is simply a yes or no on this proposal. There are, if three guys on the board of supervisors said no on this right now, like the project would be dead in the water. The big thing I think they're going to now have to confront is, if we already got 200% of the gravel we really need, and this is going to delay public use of this river for another 100 years, what is the point of approving a blast mine that's going to have explosions multiple times a week so close to a proposed parkway? Literally, this is a public park space. It has been delineated as a public park space. Now, the people who are now in control of the park space don't want to speak up about it. That's their prerogative. If they want to wear that, go ahead.
Yeah, but
I should note, so the comment period, this is all about an environmental impact report. The comments on that EIR were due on March 10th. So we'll start to see in writing what people have to say, including the Conservancy, who did say that they were going to provide written comments on the project. So we'll start to get a lot more detail from different state agencies, local agencies, about their concerns around the project. So there's going to be more public debate on this project before it goes before the supervisors.
And I want to take a 20,000 foot perspective on this for a second. There's a progressive state senator named Scott Wiener from San Francisco. He just proposed a bill to make major amendments to CEQA to try and balance development with protecting our environment. And what we're seeing is a world that realizes it's really hard to develop things, so we need to ease some of the bureaucracy around that. But then we're going to get a lot more situations like this, where you have development being supported, but it's going to run into problems that will affect communities. And so I think now more than ever is when publics need to be engaged. Because we all recognize we need to be able to build in California and expand and grow, but we also have to have our communities step up when there's development projects that will have long-term environmental damage. And so I think this is a subject that's going to keep coming up again and again, particularly as our state wrestles with housing shortages and tries to ease EIRs and all that kind of stuff. I think this is going to be a persistent topic, and it's going to be something we'll revisit quite a bit.
I will say that he's from the Bay Area, right?
Yeah, he's from San Francisco.
Yeah. One, I would be very doubtful if he creates a bill that is so broad that, you know, in a significant way change outcomes on what gets reviewed on something like mining for a century a river shed. Housing in fill or whatnot. I think that's one thing. I think another thing is, though, like in Wiener's area, I think another like important, I talked about Monterey and how much better basically these environmental officials were able to create park space from a CEMEX mine. Another one in the Bay Area is it's a massive mine. CEMEX wants to do a 600 foot pit. This pit was even bigger in the San Francisco Bay Area. Something like 1,500 feet deep. It was a pit that was used to build Shasta Dam. It was used to build a lot of the war front stuff in the Pacific Theater for the Navy in the 1940s. And this is, it's an area that more or less has been completely sacrificed for mining. And now the company that operated it, I can't remember the name, they're done with it. And basically the environmental officials over there are requiring them to fill in the whole pit and restore it back to what it once was. This is a sort of environmental leadership that's completely absent from Fresno, from the San Joaquin Valley. Thousands of acres of pits that were approved by Fresno County in the 1950s, 60s, 70s that were just basically more or less abandoned. We have rusted pipelines along our river that's owned also by the Conservancy. And it just sits there. And we have other regions in California that really expect better from private industry and expect better of what our habitats look like. And I think right now, like Donnie said that the public comment period ended March 10th. I think what's going to happen next is, like, right now, the San Joaquin River, it's in a no man's land. The River Conservancy doesn't really want to take a stance on it publicly. The board chair doesn't want to say anything. He said that he doesn't expect that the board will ever be able to take a vote on something like this. And maybe there's some state agencies that step in, but certainly resident pressure on what this park space should be, what this river shed should be for public use, I think is what weighs on the mind of any decision maker, of anybody with some modicum of power or decision-making authority.
We end these podcasts in the same way every week with what we're loving this week. Greg, what are you loving this week?
So I went hiking in Northern California last weekend, and I took with me this novel by Thomas Pynchon. He's a California writer. He's written stuff all about the V2 rocket in Germany, like land surveys in the 1870s. But he's written a series of California novels over his career. Started with Crying Aloud 49, and then a second one was called Vineland. It's about the sort of the hippies moving from Southern California to Northern California after the Reagan crackdowns in the 1960s, and what happens to the FBI and this whole federal apparatus that was mobilized in the 60s and now is going through these bureaucratic cuts, similar to what we're going through with the Trump administration right now. What did these old agents do with themselves, or how do they justify themselves to this massive system? It's a novel that has all these generations of children who are strikers and organizers and just washed up hippies and housewives. And it's an incredible book. I can't believe it's taken me so long to get to it. But yeah, I've been loving Vineland.
That's great. Taking a book on a hike, finding a nice place to sit in a tree, that's one of the best things you can do. Donnie, what about you? What are you loving this week?
I'm loving that I recently pulled out my Nintendo 64.
Get it? What are you playing?
Dr. Mario.
Oh, yeah.
The best game ever created. It's so fun. It's like Tetris. Did you guys grow up playing Tetris?
Yeah.
Tetris, that game always frustrated me.
Minesweeper, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So my college years were spent, like most people spent their college years partying, and I spent my college years playing Dr. Mario with my roommates.
Yeah.
I had to give it up for Lent one year. I was so obsessed. So that's what I'm loving.
Yes. I also spent my college years, but mine was Call of Duty while studying for my Latin finals. So what I'm loving this week is I have a friend who works at a cutlery company, and we bought a knife through her. I've always been scared of extremely sharp knives that I'm going to lose a digit. A story that's in my family's lore is I'm one of those guys that cut an avocado in half and then used the knife like a spear to spear the pit, and went all the way through the avocado and then all the way through my hand. It was like 12 hours, ER, had to have surgery. And so since then, I've been afraid of sharp knives, but then you have dull knives, those also can be dangerous. So my wife and I went on a whim and got a nice sharp knife, and it's been amazing. So just those bell peppers just to slice so smoothly.
I know what you mean.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Simple pleasures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, having sharp knives is great. And then the one other I'll say, which is also a knife word, is the show Severance. It's got me enraptured right now. I thought there was only going to be 9 episodes this season. When I saw there's a 10th, about lost my mind. I felt like this last episode, the 10th is coming out next week, was a little anticlimactic of an end. So when I looked it up and saw the 10, I like jumped up and down in excitement. It's been such a great show. It's been so enjoyable to watch. And I hope they don't take it too far and too long. I hope it's succinct. Don't stretch it out just because it's good. So that's what I'm loving this week. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinum. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.